Get ready for Ready Radio with Doug and Amy as they discuss emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by True Prep. For all your prepping needs, visit True Prep online at truprep.com or visit a True Prep store near you. Now listen in as Doug and Amy offer helpful tips for anything that comes your way. And now, your hosts, Doug and Amy.
Welcome, everybody, to this special podcast edition of Ready Radio. Today, we're going to be talking a little bit about cold. As some of you have noticed, the winter has really set in across the United States. I've been reading stories about a polar vortex and how it's bringing Arctic air down as far south as the mid-Atlantic states and even Georgia. As we look around today outside our windows, we see little bits of flurries. Isn't that right, Amy?
Yes. It's the first snow I have seen at the beginning of the new year. And I'm not used to this, Doug. Let me tell you, this is something that is foreign to me. I've been a Georgia girl most of my life, and to see snow is, it's just not common. But I know it's a little bit different for you there, huh, buddy?
Well, my wife pronounced this morning, it's snowing. And my daughter ran to the window, she's three, and threw open the curtains and said, "No, it's not, Mama. There's nothing on the ground." We were up in Alaska, and when it snowed, you know, you'd get a good solid foot, and there'd be white, and then she was ready to go out and make snow angels this morning. And I said, what's the matter, baby? And she said, "Dad, the snow isn't on the ground. It's just floating in the air." And I said, "Yeah, it's kind of the way it works when you don't get a lot of snow." And she said, "But that's no fun. How am I going to make my snow angels?"
Yeah,
she was very, very sweet. But no, I'm used to having some ice pack, and the beautiful thing was that, you know, not only would you have snow, but the snow would get packed down and it would get slick, and then you wouldn't even be able to see the asphalt because there was so much snow piled in and packed down on it. They didn't really run plow trucks to scrape down to the road. They just ran it to smooth off the accumulation.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And where we lived, it was so expensive to move everything, you know, $1 a pound to get things shipped in, that they didn't bring in salt, and there were no salt mines within the area. So they would put down a little bit of loose gravel, but there was no salting of the roads either. So you were driving on sheet ice for about 6 months out of the year, particularly in the spring when you'd have the thaw and melt sessions.
So people are still out there driving on this. That just blows my mind, because even here in Georgia, the thing is, if you get a little bit of ice on the ground, and people are not used to it. They just don't know how to drive on it. And did you have a little incident on the way in that you saw?
I did.
Something that you witnessed?
I was coming in, and there was a patch of ice on the road, and there was this truck up in front of me. It was a standard cab truck, probably two-wheel drive, I don't know, but he's driving along, and he gets on the ice. And when he hits the ice, of course, it's a rear-wheel drive vehicle. He is still applying gas, so his rear end starts to slide out from behind him. If he had just took his foot off the gas, he would have been fine. But instead, it starts to slide. When it starts to slide to the left, he turns his wheels to the right to bring the car back to where he wants it to be, but now his wheels were pointed one way, his tail was pointed another, and then he was off the ice, and he had full traction, which caused him to go straight into the curb.
Into the curb. Nice. Yeah.
I mean, he was okay. I mean, he wasn't moving fast enough to really cause any damage to his truck or himself, but that just goes to show you that he had no clue what to do in that situation.
Well, of course not. There's never time to practice, or rarely.
You know how I learned how to drive? My mom took me up to Pine Lake in Minnesota, which was completely frozen over. And there is a road that goes from Pine City, goes down to the lake, and then it pops up on the other side of the lake. And in the wintertime, in the summer, you use it as a boat launch. In the wintertime, you just drive across the lake to the other half of the road. So I learned to drive on a frozen lake.
Wow.
And we got out to the middle of the lake, and I'm going along, and it's no big deal because we're going in a straight line, and who really cares? And Mom said, "Slam on your brakes and turn your wheel." I was like, "Why?" She said, "Just do it." And I slammed on my brakes, and I turned the wheel, and we spun about six or seven times around in a circle in the middle of that lake.
Oh, my goodness.
She said, "Okay, now I want you to do it again, only this time bring us out of it."
Wow.
And for a morning, I spun around on a lake in a car.
Wow.
Until finally I was able to, when I started into a spin, bring it right back out, whip it into a solid line on the ice.
Wow.
So
that's impressive.
Practice does make perfect.
Yes. Well, not all of us have a frozen lake to go practice on, though, Doug, especially out here in Georgia.
That's true. And it's more than just, you know, being able to do it. You have to be mentally prepared for it. You have to know to do what you should not do. when you feel the car start to slide to the left and you want to go right, your inclination is to turn right, but you've got to keep the front end in front of the back end. And so you have to overcome your natural impulses to do what's right, even though it's not what you're trained to do.
What if the direction that the ice is taking you is sort of like off a cliff or something? Do you just have to hold on tight?
You're a little bit out of luck.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and curves are a big deal. We were coming out of the Lutheran Church in Dillingham. We had gone to a Friday night art festival that they were holding. It was one of the largest buildings, and a lot of things happened at the Lutheran Church. So we were coming out of there, and it was sheet ice, and it was around a curve. And we started to slide off into the ditch.
Oh,
and my wife's like, "No, we gotta stop, gotta stop." I'm like, "We're on ice. You're not gonna stop. You're gonna go into the ditch." But you know what? We've got a 4-wheel drive, and we've got tow ropes, and we know what we're doing. When we hit the ditch, we'll get out of the ditch. And that's exactly what happened. We slammed into a snowbank, and then I got out, put a little bit of traction under the tires, backed up, and slid down the other direction. Okay. The 4-wheel drive doesn't keep you on the road. It just helps you get back on the road.
Right, yeah, I suppose. Now, what about kitty litter? Is that something that really works, that you can put, like, kitty litter underneath your tires?
Yes, it's traction. It's all about traction. You know, if you had studded tires, it wouldn't be an issue, but you don't want to run studs on bare asphalt, and since we have nothing but bare asphalt here, that was one of the reasons, you know, everybody used studded tires. There was a big sign when you went into town that said, must remove studded tires from May through September.
Oh, wow.
So you were allowed to run studs up till May because there was still ice on the roads everywhere. But it kills your tires and it kills the roads to run studs on bare asphalt. Mm-hmm. So you don't really have that option down here. Instead, you're trying to find ways to get traction. And if you are in a position where you are straight on the ice, the best thing you can do is to switch to 4-wheel drive. The reason is now instead of having 2 6-inch contact points underneath each tire, you have 4 6-inch contact points to distribute the weight and distribute the torque to be able to move your vehicle. But let's say that even then, you're still spinning. Well, now you're going to have to create traction some way, even though you have your torque dispersed as much as humanly possible. And that way to create traction is kitty litter. It works fantastic if you put it under your tires. I remember a couple years ago when I was living here in Atlanta, we had a big ice storm, and I went out to go grocery shopping, and everything was closed. So I came back. In the meantime, my neighbor saw me go out in my, you know, rear-wheel drive vehicle and thought, oh, well, Doug's going out. It's no big deal. So I come back, and he is spinning his tires frantically at the end of his driveway, turned sideways into the curb, and finally, you know, I went and parked, and I've kind of watched him, and he gets out of his car, and he's just, I mean, utter deflation. He's just staring at this horrible vehicle that won't move for him no matter what he tries to do. So without a word, I go and pop over my trunk, I grab my bag of cat litter, I walk down, his car is still running, the door is open, I pour cat litter under each tire, I don't say a word. Get into his car, back it up into his driveway, put it where it was before, get out, leave it running, and walk back up to my house.
Nice.
He didn't say anything to me. I didn't say anything to him. I just put the car back where it was supposed to be, and he stayed there for the next few days. Driving on ice is a learned talent, but it's not something that you have to have a frozen lake to learn how to do. It's just common sense. And most things coming with extreme cold have to deal with common sense preparation.
Good point. Yeah, because there's a lot of things other than just driving. I think probably driving in ice is probably the least of our worries. The temperatures that we have currently are definitely breaking some records. And there are some other concerns out there. It's like today, the weather is, what is it, in the 20s, 25?
Yeah,
afternoon.
I think that it's going to get up to 26. It's been steadily falling from 50 last night, which was really warm.
And then I think it's the lowest is supposed to get down to 6. I think, I want to say Tuesday morning, early Tuesday morning, I believe it's supposed to be down to like 6 degrees.
Right.
Which is definitely going to be breaking some records. When it comes to that, it's as far as just staying inside. I think another something to really be concerned about or really to think about is if your electricity does go out and and all of a sudden it gets awfully chilly in your house.
Not just electricity, but then you're switching over to using your gas furnace or you're using internal heating methods, and then you've got issues with carbon monoxide.
Yes. Well, and then I think it was the American Lung Association, the American Lung Association stats were saying that when emergencies or power outages happen, that's when they have the most carbon monoxide problems, incidences.
not only carbon monoxide is a killer, but also house fires. I mean, every time we have a cold dip down here, you hear about an apartment fire wiping out not only the person who didn't know what they were doing to create the fire, but everybody else in the building.
Yes.
No matter how prepared you are, if you live in an apartment complex, there's always the danger of one of your neighbors being able to wipe out what you own. And if you're living in a separate house, or you have some room between you, even then house fires can spread.
Yeah, that's very true. And here, our listeners are listening to Ready Radio. And our main focus is emergency preparedness. And, obviously we're talking about the cold and that sort of thing today. With emergency preparedness, I'm thinking one of the best things to run out and get, two wonderful things, would be a carbon monoxide detector and maybe a fire extinguisher.
Oh, yeah. Everyone should have a fire extinguisher. Trust me. I'm well-versed in the need for fire extinguishers.
Yes.
But a carbon monoxide detector is standard in most homes that are manufactured after 2005 up north. And the reason is because it's a ever-present danger. I mean, we're always using heat in the wintertime. And, down here, people use heat more often than probably is needed, but you're still having those issues. The first time you crank it up, you're going to have, all sorts of emissions that you're not used to dealing with. And you've got fire hazards from your furnace turning on because you've got accumulation of dust and things on the coils, which accumulates over the long summer, and you're not using it every day. In Dillingham, where I lived, there was no way to turn the furnaces off. They ran year-round.
Oh, wow.
And at night, they would kick on just for a little while, just to keep everything moving and lubricated, because if your furnace went out, if it died, you were in serious trouble. When you have temperatures that were the air temps are 20 to 30 below and wind chills are 40 to 60 below, then your house is going to lose its insulation value very quickly.
Yeah, you're getting into life-threatening temperatures at that point.
Well, you're getting into life-threatening temperatures even at 30 degrees. At freezing, if you are not properly outfitted for it, you are going to die in it. It's just going to take you a little while, and it's not going to be as dramatic. But you can't survive in a T-shirt and jeans in 30-degree weather for any period of time outdoors. Now, when you're running from your nice warm car to your nice warm office to your nice warm house, it's not a big deal. But if you had to go stand outside in 35-degree weather for 4 hours, you're going to have hypothermia.
Well, let's discuss maybe some options. Let's say that all the utilities go out. Maybe there's some ice on the power, maybe the ice takes the power out and some things like that. I know some people make some pretty bad choices as far as different ways of heating their home.
Like turning the oven on and just opening the door?
Right.
I've seen that one.
That's a bad one. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a bad one. That's a great way to kill your family.
yeah.
And then I've even heard of people bringing in like outdoor grills. Bringing things that are meant to be used for outdoors and bringing those inside.
Yeah, in order for something to be used inside, even a tent, it has to be specially designed and have an outgassing source so that you can pump the fumes out. And if you're just using a propane grill or a charcoal grill in your house, all of those emissions are going to build up, and it's very dangerous. Mm-hmm. Not to mention the fire hazards.
Yeah, so I love my little electric heater, one that I can plug in and snuggle up next to. Obviously, if the electricity is out, I'm not going to be able to use that.
And that converting electricity to heat is the most inefficient use of electricity.
I know.
So
it's not a good option.
You're much better off using some sort of a fossil fuel to heat with. Propane is ideal, but they make very good internal heaters that are designed and are vented that use propane that you can install in your house. My grandmother, who is very cold-natured, decided that her furnace was just not keeping up in the South Georgia cold, so she installed one right in her bedroom and had it professionally installed to their gas line so that she can turn on propane heat anytime she wants, and it cut their electricity bill from using the electric one significantly.
Yeah, and professionally installed, I think, is the key word there. Because when things are not professionally done or well ventilated, that's when you kind of run into those problems.
Yeah, next thing you're sitting in a cold place with no heat at all.
And we know how uncomfortable that can be.
Yeah, and the professional installation does come into play because, we have lots of regulations where the gas company comes out and inspects things, and, if it's not, if the ventilation isn't right, if the equipment isn't right, they'll put warning signs and say that you're not supposed to operate this until you have it fixed properly.
I've heard. Yeah, I have heard things like that. Those warnings, they'll get you. I have a fireplace.
Fireplace is a great way to heat, and that's, you know, the way that homes are traditionally heated. Now, you want to be careful which wood you have. You know, you don't really want to be burning pine wood in your fireplace because you're going to have creosote build up, and then you're going to have another fire hazard. But having a good backstock of wood, back where I lived, most people had a fireplace. Even a lot of the apartments had fireplaces. People would put up wood for the entire winter and burn it to supplement because the furnaces up there ran on diesel.
Ooh.
At $8 a gallon.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And it got expensive very quick. It was much more efficient than the electricity because you were to warm with electricity. It was around 60, 70 cents per kilowatt hour. In comparison, most Georgians pay 11 cents per kilowatt hour. Mm-hmm. So just take your energy bill on an average winter day and multiply it by 8.
Oh, my.
And you'll see what it costs to do the same up in Western Alaska.
Yeah, that's painful.
We would be very careful. We were subsidized on our electricity up to 500 kilowatt hours. So as long as we were under 500 kilowatt hours, we were only paying $200-$300 a month for electricity. Mm-hmm. After that, it went astronomical. And in the wintertime, during the summer, our electric bills were around $100 a month. But in the wintertime, because the only thing we ran electricity on in the winter that we didn't in the summer was the block heater for the truck. And that we had to keep plugged in 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't running, it had to be plugged in or it would freeze up.
Hmm.
So just the block heater, which is a small electric blanket transmitting just a little bit of electricity mm-hmm. to heat to keep the block warm, cost me $300 a month to run.
Wow.
That's
insane.
That's the inefficiency of using electricity to generate heat.
Wow. That's crazy. You know, we have, with our fireplace, we have the brick that goes around, and the brick gets nice and heated after a while, and I know that creates a heat that helps, you know, sort
radiant.
Of radiant heat. There's the word I was looking for, and it helps warm up the whole house. I just wish it were more, because I know I'm losing a lot of that heat right out the
flue.
Out the flue.
Yeah, that's just the way it has to be in order to get rid of the emissions. Mm-hmm. There are pot-bellied stoves, though, that are encased in ceramics. And these were really popular because the ceramic would build up the heat and radiate it all night. Mm-hmm. You could create a roaring fire in the stove and after a few hours let it go dead. And the heat from the ceramic would keep the entire house warm throughout the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a great way to save money up there. And those have a dual purpose because not only is it acting to heat your home, but it actually is a functioning stove. So you can cook on the top of it or use the oven inside.
Yeah. And again, just making sure that it's well ventilated is definitely the key on that one.
It really needs to be, and I'm going to reiterate this, professionally installed.
Yes.
You want to make sure that the ventilation is proper because otherwise you're looking not only at fire hazards but also carbon monoxide, and it's not worth taking a risk.
Right. And you can definitely find out how to do it on Google. You know, you can find pretty much how to do pretty much anything on Google, but having it professionally done. And on top of that, you know, just following up with your carbon monoxide detectors.
It's also going to be an issue for your homeowner's insurance.
Oh, yes.
If it's not professionally installed and you're adding a fireplace or something like that, then you may not be able to get homeowner's insurance until it's inspected mm-hmm. and signed off on. So at some point, even if you're trying to save money on labor, that's all well and good. At some point, somebody has to okay it who really knows what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and I love the whole idea of the radiant heat, you know, with the stoves. And something I'm going to do later today that I found on, I think it was YouTube or something, it's all over the internet, is how to make these little flower pot radiant heaters. And it's really pretty interesting.
Okay, tell me about these.
Basically, the way it works with a candle, just a single little flame, underneath these flower pots. And the flower pots are put together with a, I'm losing the word here. The bolt.
Okay.
So basically you've got your bolts and your washers and that sort of thing, and you put a couple flower pots together, and underneath it you put a single flame, and after a little bit of time it heats up the flower pots, which actually just sends out that radiant heat.
I'm guessing we're using terracotta, not plastic, for these.
Yes, terracotta and unglazed.
Unglazed.
Yes.
Why
unglazed.
Is that important?
Well, I guess I would imagine that it would hold the heat in. I think I'm not really sure why. And like I said, I haven't made them yet. I've only read about them. But they did specify to use the unglazed terracotta pots.
Okay.
So it'll be interesting.
It is. Now,
It's only for a little small area, by the way. So if you have a big room or something, it's not going to heat up your whole room, but just sort of right around that area.
Now, I got introduced to the idea of using terracotta pots for cooking from Alton Brown. Mm-hmm. And he uses his pots to create a big green egg.
I've heard of the big green egg.
Yeah.
Actually, I have drooled over a few big green eggs.
Well, you know, you can get those terracotta pots that are the planter size that are huge. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, you know, 3 or 4 foot across mm-hmm. at the mouth, and they taper in. You take two of those, flip them upside down to each other, and then you put in the bottom one, you put a grill grid. And you put charcoal on it, and then you take a larger grill grid to make a separate cooking surface, mm-hmm. and it heats up throughout the ceramic, because, you know, that's what terracotta basically yes. is. It's just like a big green egg. It'll heat up inside, and then you can roast inside of that, and it has a little cook, you know, comes out through the top. So it's ventilated. So it's not made to be used indoors, obviously,
right.
but it allows you to cook without having to shell out for a big green egg.
Hmm. Nice.
Yeah, I thought that it had a lot of utility, and it seemed to be a great idea. You can look it up. We'll link to it on our website so you can see that design as well as the small pot heater mm-hmm. so that you can look them up and maybe build your own or get ready to roast some hams and turkeys outdoors.
Sure. Yeah, sounds like a plan. What are some other – do you have any other ideas of maybe some ways of staying warm indoors?
My best solution for staying, because we keep our house fairly cold, mm-hmm. and we use a lot of...
Like on purpose?
On purpose, because okay. it saves money, and I'm just more comfortable. I'm kind of like a big hairy bear over here, and I like my house to be a little bit chilly.
Now, how about the wife? Is she happy with it? A little chilly, too?
Not so much.
That's what I was guessing. Yeah, because I don't think I'd be real.
But she's thrilled that we save money on the electric bill, okay. which kind of... evens out. And the advantage is that you have more reason to snuggle up under a nice warm blanket.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of what we do. We wear sweaters, we wear, you know, heavier clothing to make up for it. And when we settle in for the night to watch TV, blankets come pouring out of the kids' bedroom and the closets. They all have their own one. They snuggle up and mm-hmm. everyone's comfy without mm-hmm. having to pay to heat the entire house to what would be a comfortable level. When you sleep, you like it to be a little more chilly.
Yeah, I do. If it's hot, you know, I just don't sleep that well. But if it's really cold and I can snuggle up in my blankets, that's for a good sleep. And something, too, I've read multiple times that you lose your body heat through your head.
Mm-hmm.
So wearing a stocking cap can really help keep your body heated.
Do you ever see that episode of Seinfeld where George had the big hat from Russia and he was walking around? Everyone was bundled up and he's walking around in, like, T-shirt and sandals because he has this giant fur hat that was about 3 feet tall on his head because nice. It kept all the heat in.
Okay.
So he was fine.
So he was fine.
Yeah. I kind of felt like that. I went and got a really good fur hat when I moved, and it does make a world of difference, especially yeah. for the balder guys.
I like the flaps that go over the ears. You know, mm-hmm. So when you run, they kind of flap up and down.
Well, What are they called? The flaps that come
yeah.
down actually have little tags that they snap underneath so that they
or
don't
the bow.
Flap.
Yeah, I like the ones that with the bow, so you can tie it. The big bow underneath.
You tie it in a knot. You can tie it in a bow.
That's right. Yeah. I'll have to get you one of those. Maybe we could get you one of those and post that on our
website. Oh, I'll show you the hat I want. I know the hat I want.
Okay.
It is got the skull of a gray wolf on top of it
mm-hmm.
so that it's looking at you. Have you ever seen True Grit, the new one?
I have.
Okay, remember the guy who had the Wolverine on his head?
Yes.
They sell those.
Oh, no.
And they're horribly expensive.
I can imagine.
The gray wolf hat with the gray wolf looking at you is over $1,000.
Oh, no.
But, I mean, how incredibly awesome would it to be wearing a wolf?
That, I don't know. Maybe around Georgia, not so much. You know, if you want to go back to up to Alaska with one of those, you might
I was afraid I was
a little better, maybe.
Up there. Up
I
there,
just,
I was afraid if I was walking around outside, I might get shot. Down here, at least, you know,
yeah.
I would just get looked at strange. But, no, having proper clothing is a huge, huge deal. I think that's a really good point. Another issue that I really want to cover while we have a little time remaining is how to stay warm in the frigid elements outside. I think a lot of people are ill-prepared for that, and they think, oh, you know, I have my leather jacket, I have a pair of gloves from Nordstrom's, I'm going to be fine. You know, I go outside all the time, and I haven't frozen yet. But when you're going to be spending extended periods outdoors, it becomes a much hairier proposition. Where I was up, not only did you have frigid temperatures and wind chills, but you also had issues like riding a snowmobile, where you would have your wind chills instantly kick up to an extra 50 mile an hour on top of what they were normally blowing. And so having good mittens, having mittens that you could work in and then have, or gloves that you can work in and having mittens that fit over the top of them, were essential.
That's an interesting point, because usually my fingers get cold whenever I'm wearing, like, gloves. And I guess I don't really know the difference between gloves, or, well, I guess the mittens don't have the fingers in them. And
mittens are solid, and gloves are individual fingers. And when you're trying
But my coffee's going to slip right out of my hands if I'm wearing mittens, though,
then, yeah, it will. Oh. And that's just kind of the nature of it. And the idea is that you leave the mittens on when you're not doing things to keep and maintain the heat for all of your fingers, and your fingers get combined warmth because they're not separated. But you have a glove on, a thinner glove, that you then pull the mitten off to be able to do manual labor with for a short period of time, and then put the mitten back on over it. I had a pair of knit gloves that were very lightweight. They did not have much R value, but they kept the wind off of my fingers for brief periods. And then I would slide my hand into a larger mitten that would go up to usually my mid forearm, if not up to my elbow.
Oh, wow.
And that way it would overcoat my coat, and then we'd have interlocking chambers so that the warmth would not escape. The other thing is, good coats have fasteners on the wrist to keep the heat from inside the coat from coming out by your wrist.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a mitten that goes up over that, then you don't have to fasten it down, and the heat can flow into your hand from your upper body heat.
And these are things, I mean, you just don't see these kind of things in Georgia. I mean, usually when people are outside, typically the person that's outside in this type of weather, like we're having today, and we mentioned it's about 25 degrees outside right now, and we're sitting here watching it snow.
It is actually, it's actually snowing. It's not just flurries.
I know. Yeah, it's exciting.
It's not sticking, though.
It's not sticking, which is, I wonder why, because it's like 25 degrees out there.
Because it takes so long for the ground to cool off. I mean, we had 50 degrees last night. That ground it's not going to be cold enough for it to stick for 2 or 3 days of this, so.
Yeah. Well, it is what it is. Well, and here's the thing. When I'm outside, I'm usually running from, like, my car to my house or something like that. But, although I would send my husband outside maybe to go chop some wood or something like that, I'm trying to think of other scenarios of why we would be, like, outdoors for a certain amount of time.
Well, maybe you have to move. Maybe that there has been some kind of a catastrophe and people need to get from one location to another. You're moving to your bug-out location, or you're moving to a different area. The freeways are impassable and you're going to have to walk. But it just happens to be bad timing that it's the days where the highs are in the 20s and the lows are 6 below that you're going to have to be doing this trek. Now, how are you going to keep yourself warm? How are you going to keep your kids warm while you're moving? The only solution is to have materials on hand that are suitable for all these temperature conditions. If you're going to be moving in the middle of summer and you're having highs in the hundreds and lows in the upper 80s with high humidity, you need to be able to be dressed for that when you are on the move. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to be on the move possibly in wintertime, you should be able to have layers, and you should have, fleece-lined pants, and you should have good mittens and gloves so that in a hat and a face mask so that you can move around in 6 below wind chill. Which it can happen. I mean, it does happen here, not often, but if you're really going to be prepared for everything, you should have one set of good clothes that you could wear for 2 or 3 days to move around outdoors in and be functional and not freeze.
Yeah, and I'm wondering also, I'm thinking about where a good place to get that, because we are sponsored by True Prep, the emergency preparedness retail store, and they have so many great things as far as like moving with the backpacks and get home bags and all the food and the water and pretty much everything you need for bugging out or getting home or things like that. But I know that they don't have like ski gear.
they don't carry, and ski gear may not be the best option, and military surplus may not be the best option.
So where would be a good place to find that kind of stuff?
I would go looking online for outfitters that actually do cater to people who are doing things in more remote areas. One of the ones that I used up in Alaska was Fifth Avenue Outfitters. They carried a full line of things. There's also REI, which tends to be a little bit more expensive, but they do have top quality merchandise. Places like Cabela's also offer a full line of relatively cheap winter weather gear. You can get down jackets from Cabela's that start at only $400 or $500. Now, that may seem to be an incredible expense for something you may never use, but If you ever travel, you're probably going to use it in the wintertime. A good down jacket will last you a lifetime. And if you're really starting to worry about what could happen and want to be prepared for any eventuality, having to move around outdoors in the wintertime is something that's going to come up. And you should be able to be prepared for that as well.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm thinking, too, I mean, even, you know, some of the other outdoor things, other than chopping wood, because, it's labor-intensive.
You got to go walk your German Shepherd or your Wiener Dog. I mean, you got to go outside sometime. You can't just hole up and hope that it's going to warm up soon.
I think I kind of could. I'm just fine snuggling up by a fire.
When we had that big ice storm a few years ago, it was ice and then it was a lot of snow and everything closed. It was just after New Year's, I remember, because I had a trial that was coming up and I was told I had to come in to court for it. And nobody was there. It was just me and the one judge who called me in. I was I'm here. And she's like, go home. So I got back to the house and I was like, you know, it's been a long time since I have been out walking in the snow. And I bundled up. I slapped on a leg holster. I got on my fleece-lined wool jeans. I got on my heavy coat and a sweater and my hat and my gloves. And I took off and I walked. Mm-hmm. I walked about 3 miles out in the snow and came back because it was fun
just
to do.
Get out, yeah.
Yeah.
So I can definitely understand. I mean, being held up in a little space without much to do. I think my husband would probably drive me out to go for a walk after a certain amount of time. God bless him. I love him to death, but after a couple days, I can see going for a walk in the snow. And maybe even without all the gear. I think I would just I've got a jacket. I'll be fine.
wander off for the peace off. And quiet of winter. Yeah.
Yes. The quietness of the snow does wonders for the soul.
speaking of bliss and quiet, what are some of the signs of hypothermia?
Oh, gosh. I think, isn't it when your fingers turn black and fall off? Is that one?
You know, yes. Frostbite is a lot of fun, but
I've never experienced it.
At first, when you start to lose body heat, your body tries to adapt by shivering. So the first sign that you're in trouble is uncontrollable shivering. Now, and we all have little twinges here and there when you're out in the cold. That's chilly. Mm-hmm. But you get to a point where you actually cannot control. Like if you've ever had a bad flu and you've had chills and you cannot control the shaking.
I have been through that.
That is the first sign of real hypothermia starting to set in. And you have got to find a way to warm up your body at that point. Mm-hmm. After that, when it gets scary is when it stops. Mm. Because your body is giving up. Mm-hmm. And then there's a point where you actually experience bliss. Mm-hmm. You no longer care, and you're no longer cold, and you actually start to feel warm and comfortable.
I've seen that on a Discovery Channel or something like that, where there was something where... I know what it was. I was watching where there was a man that was stuck in his car and for a certain amount of time. And then wandered off, and then he started shedding his clothing as he's walking because
he felt warm, he felt comfortable.
And he was actually feeling hot.
Decision making process goes right out the window. Yeah, the one of the first things that you lose is decision making ability, and as you lose your body temperature, your ability to make good choices degrades quickly. A lot of people think that alcohol warms them up, but it's absolutely the wrong thing to do. Alcohol causes you to actually lose body heat faster.
I wasn't aware of that. I mean, I'm kind of pro-alcohol.
It does give you a warm sensation in your stomach,
but it's
actually tricking you into thinking that you're warmer than you are, and it will degrade your decision-making process even faster.
Yeah, I have seen that happen also to loved ones.
Yeah, so I mean that gets you to the point where you can really be in danger. People are already prone to making bad decisions, like shedding clothing because they feel warm, and it gets worse from there. Mm-hmm. You may not even realize that you've developed frostbite in extremities because of the influences of alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. So alcohol is a no-no.
During emergency situations, you need to be at your best. You need your faculties working because you're not going to be at your best to begin with.
That's a good point.
Any emergency situation, when there's stress, you see a degradation of fine motor skills, you see a degradation of visual and audio acuity, and then on top of that, poor decision making. Those are inherent human characteristics. Our flight or fight response kicks in, the adrenaline shuts down things so that we're focused, we're powerful, we're moving, but we're not making the best choices and we're not able to do fine motor work as well. And it's a trade-off. I mean, you want to be able to have that burst of speed to either fight or fight, flight or fight, mm-hmm. but you also are losing something. And I mean, every time there's an up, there's a down. I mean, there's mm-hmm. an equal and opposite reaction. And so to get that boost of speed, you're giving up. But now, in our society today, you're probably not going to need that boost of speed as much as you need good, clear decision-making. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can think your way out of a problem a lot better than you can fight or fly from it.
Yes, yes. I'd have to agree with that.
And so here we are with our primordial instincts fighting with us to put us in a worse position than we really should be, because it's degrading our ability to make decisions. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, and I'm sitting here kind of thinking, too, about in preparation. The way I do my emergency preparedness is I sort of have a list of what's the most important to me as far as, you know, preparing for and things like that. And living in Georgia, the weather that we're going through right now, is just so rare. And I'm wondering where on my list I should put, you know, this as a priority, but not only that, as far as just the cold and the weather, you know, in particular, what I should prioritize, you know, first and foremost.
Granted, somebody who lives in Key West has a lot different requirements than somebody who lives in Oregon or Minneapolis
right.
or Buffalo.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a lot of listeners who are in different areas who do this on a daily basis mm-hmm. and have a kit for their car for the winter and have the cat litter and have an extra blanket and have things that they can use to warm up the car without having to run the engine the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
They keep a snow shovel, a folding snow shovel in the back to clear off the exhaust pipe so they can run the car if the car was stranded. We don't need to do that here. I mean, it's just not really a factor in the South. But what could happen? I mean, there's always a possibility of us having a snowstorm that lasts for a week,
mm-hmm.
and we have ice on the roads. Is it worth spending $1,500 to have an extra set of rims with studded tires to switch out so that you would be able to keep moving during an ice storm? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, that goes into your decision-making
mm-hmm.
matrix. Probably, if you have everything else, it's not a bad idea. But none of us have everything else, I don't think. And is it as, you know, sexy as being able to buy a new Glock or to get something else that you can play with every day? You know, having an extra four tires you'll probably never use? No, it's not. So it doesn't have that, you know, feeling of, oh, I've got something I enjoy. And it doesn't have the feeling of, oh, I'm ever going to use this. So it comes down on the list. But if you travel up into the Midwest, if you go where these
mm-hmm.
things can happen, having it on hand and keeping it available for yourself and your family, it's not a bad idea. And it's a good way to prepare without altering what you're doing just for the preparation.
And as we're sitting in the middle of, you know, 25 degree weather and we're watching the snow outside, I mean, it's more real for me, you know, right this very minute to feel like, oh, I better check my supplies and see and really look what I have weather related. Where when it warms up and let me tell you, when spring comes and the birds are chirping and things are turning, you know, the pretty, you know, nice little baby green colors, you know, I'm not really thinking about that stuff so much. But like right here and now, I'm thinking, how much firewood do we have? How much, you know, what do we have in you know, the refrigerator and things like that?
And how much do I have to eat of cold soup if I can't warm it up?
Yeah.
You know, speaking of refrigerators,
mm-hmm.
this is just an anecdotal story that I enjoy telling. My wife, her biggest thing about moving back down here was having to move all of the groceries back into the house again.
Oh, my.
Well, it was so cold up there that uh-huh. we would leave everything that needed to be frozen, we'd just leave it in the truck.
Oh,
because
okay.
it would freeze solid out there.
Yeah.
It was a lot colder in the truck than it was in the freezer.
Wow.
So the meat was frozen quicker and it
yes.
was keep better. And we left lots of stuff in the back of the Suburban all winter long. We'd go to the store and buy
yeah.
up things and just leave it there and then bring it in when we needed it.
That's a good idea. And it's in the vehicle so no animals can get into it. I was kind of thinking it would be a good idea to have like a metal cabinet or something out in the back. Like, you know, in the back, because if it were freezing outside and the electricity goes out, I was thinking, well, heck. Well, first of all, they say don't open and close your refrigerator doors or, you know, the doors to your refrigerator or freezer. Often, just, you know, just open it, grab what you need, and shut it and try
mm-hmm.
to keep it shut instead of, you know, browsing through.
Because all of the cold air flows out quickly,
mm-hmm.
especially. And that's one of the nice things about having a chest freezer rather than having a stand-up freezer, is because the cold air stays down,
mm-hmm.
warm air rises. So you lift the chest freezer and you're getting a lot less cold air flowing out of it than if you open the
point.
Front door and it comes pouring
that's
onto
true.
The ground.
Yeah, I haven't really thought about that. Yeah, but I guess if it were a long period of time, if it were over days, and it's, you know, you weren't able to eat up everything that were in your freezer, maybe a outdoor metal cabinet might work.
Yeah, you could move if it's not getting above freezing. Your able to store stuff outdoors in those temperatures. So, I mean, it's something that I guess everybody who's grown up in a cold climate remembers doing. I mean, when I lived in Minnesota, I left stuff out on the in the garage because it was below freezing there, and I didn't have to worry about lugging it around, and we had infinite freezer space. But down here, something that people don't really think of.
You know, I'm thinking too that I bet a lot of our listeners, if they're listening, they're like, oh, I've got a great idea. You know, some way that I do this. And I'm hoping maybe they'll jump on our website. We have a website. It's readyradio.net. And they can actually communicate with us and maybe just, you know, give us, you know, some of their ideas and throw them out there. We'd love to hear them.
Send an email to info@readyradio.net. Post up a comment on Facebook or Twitter. We'd be happy to not only listen to what you have to say, but... but get your comments on the air next week as we go through things and bring it up. I know that we are coming up on the segment we normally do for the product of the week. And given that it's kind of been a chilly day, I think that a good one would be hand warmers.
Oh, yes.
And I know that True Prep has two different types of hand warmers. First, they have the chemical hand warmers, and then they have a Zippo hand warmer. Can you tell me a little bit about the Zippo hand warmer?
I actually just sent my son away with a Zippo hand warmer. I originally purchased one for my husband because he hunts and he's usually outdoors, and I try to kick him out there to go, you know, bring me back a deer. He got a boar. I was very excited about this big wild boar, his first one, close to 300 pounds.
Wow, that
massive,
is a big.
Yes, and he's so excited. He's getting the head mounted, so I am excited about that.
Yeah.
That's probably going to go in the basement. But he was thinking a great place for that was over the fireplace, and I thought, oh, yeah, no.
No, dining room or the kitchen table.
Well, that's what my daughter wants me to put in. I'm like, what? Are you insane?
Yeah.
So then another thought was like in our bedroom, like over, you know, right over our bed. And I was like, there's no way I'm waking up looking at that thing every morning. Are you kidding me? I'd wake up with nightmares. I'm still thinking the basement's the best idea. But regardless, so I bought the Zippo hand warmer for him. And the way that this thing works is you put the fluid, use the Zippo fluid with it, and you light it. And it's the strangest thing. You light it, you put the cap on it, and then you put it in a little baggie. And apparently it does not burn everything up. But now he said that, you know, it was with the scent. It has the strong scent, and you really couldn't use it for hunting and that kind of thing. But I did send it with my son. He actually took off in his vehicle, headed up north, and of course, Mama Bear, you know, the Mama Bear that I am, I'm like, oh, honey, you need warm socks, you need this and that. So I sent him with a Zippo hand warmer, and he was thrilled.
And
he
loves it. You can use other fluids with it as well. You don't have to use just lighter fluid, but you could use gasoline or kerosene or diesel if you needed to, but of course it would stink to high heaven.
Sure.
But in an emergency, you have different options there.
Mm-hmm.
I like the little chemical hand warmers a lot myself because they're so portable, and they work basically on the same premise as an oxygen absorber. They take and act as a catalyst and create heat from the interaction with the oxygen, and it warms up the pockets so that when you keep your hands in there that they keep you going. And I've used those for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
They're fantastic, especially when you're out, you know, camping on Thanksgiving Day waiting for the Black Friday sales. They just kind of keep your fingertips from getting too nippy.
That was actually the first time I was introduced to hand warmers. I was standing outside of Sam's Club and, you know, this nice big long line, and they came through, you know, just kind of walking through and handing out these hand warmers, like, oh, that's awesome. And so, you know, at first when you open them up and they're exposed to air, they're supposed to start working. I was like, mine's not working. Yeah, but those stupid things, I guess they take just a little while. But let me tell you, once they start warming up, those were really nice.
And they last for about 8 hours.
I definitely noticed that.
So they, I mean,
it's been a long time. It does,
I mean, it's not a panacea, it's not a be-all, end-all, but it does have its uses, and I think that they're very handy. It's a good True Prep product of the week.
All right. Excellent.
Everybody, thank you for joining us today on Ready Radio. We will be back next week. Be checking in. We're going to be altering the format a little bit. We're going to be incorporating some more news and some other topics into our shows. Our shows are going to be a little bit longer with the podcast editions than they have been for the just broadcast editions. So chime in, please, on either Facebook or Twitter. Go to our forum, readyradio.net online, or you can go over to True Prep and leave comments for us there. And we'll be incorporating your suggestions into the new Ready Radio.
You've been listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy as they discuss emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by True Prep. For all your prepping needs, visit True Prep online at truprep.com or visit one of their stores near you. Tune in to Ready Radio each week as they help prepare you for anything that can come your way. Right here at ReadyRadio.net.